So yes, today we will continue with the Beatles. Last time we finished with the Boo Prestity, I believe, and we're ready to start with the Helmety. This is the Super Family Beeroidea. I guess I should first ask, anybody have questions from last time? Seems like a long time ago now since you had that exam. I guess it has been almost a week. It'll be a week tomorrow. Since we lectured. Having trouble finding the spot.
No, I can't remember what marsh beetles were.
Oh, we skipped those. Although every time I tell, I don't think we did them last time. We used to require that. And every time I tell Jerry, I said, yeah, I told him we didn't have to know the it's the Sciuridae, right?
Yeah.
That we did, he says, but they're really common. I said, yeah, but they're around marshes and wet areas and stuff. We don't collect them very often. Okay. So the Sciuridae, yeah, it's one that I told you before, we're not required this time. So we're doing the Beeroidea, starting with the Beeroidea, another superfamily. And as I said, we are kind of talk about superfamilies, it's just a way to split this up some, but it's kind of difficult to define some of these superfamilies. This one, again, it contains mainly aquatic families, but they're different than the aquatic families we've seen before. The aquatic, you know, like the Dytisidae and the Hydrophilidae, you can tell the adults were really adapted to swimming and being in an aquatic environment. In these families now, adaptations are found more in the larvae. They've got gills and things to breathe with. The adults look like regular beetles. They just occur underwater. At least some of them do. The Heterocerids are not much underwater, but they look like regular beetles. They hold on to twigs and branches and things underwater, and that, so they don't have a lot of adaptations for underwater living in the adult stages, although they may have some hairs that help hold a bubble around them and stuff. So, the first family we'll talk about is the Helmety. These are commonly called riffle beetles.
Not to be confused with the riffle bug.
Ripple bug?
Riffle bug.
Riffle bug. The Veleids.
Yeah, Veleids, Helmets.
Yeah, they're on top of the water. These are still under the water, but they are in riffle areas.
What's a riffle?
Riffle is the fast moving parts of a stream or creek where it gets a little shallower and there often is stones and rocks and stuff, but it's where the water is really fast moving as opposed to the more pool or slower areas.
Riffle bugs is kind of like a part on their body that looks kind of like a riffle. These are
maybe a little bit, but this is because they occur in riffle areas.
Mm-hmm.
These are again, if there's sticks or twigs in the water and in the fast moving areas, the way to catch these is just pull the stick out and start looking it over, and you'll start seeing them. They'll start moving a little bit, and you'll see these little beetles just clinging onto the branches or twigs. This family, you're most likely to confuse it with the next one, the Dryopids, Dryopidae. These are a little bit smaller than the Dryopidae. And if you look, you can see that the antennae on these are a little longer and filiform, whereas in the Dryopidae, they're kind of short and serrate. Both of these families have really long, the last tarsal segments are really long. In fact, the Dryopidae are called the long-toed water beetles. The Helmets, antennae are usually filiform, 11-segmented. The front coxae are globose. Again, we're still in these families where most of them are, the tarsal formula is 5-5-5. But again, the last segment is very long with long claws. G- Again, these are found in the riffle areas. That's where the oxygen levels would be greatest. Often in relatively sandy or gravelly streams. They feed mainly on algae or moss, plant materials that are growing on these sticks. This is, well, when I was down at Louisiana State University, another girl that was working in the lab, this is what she did her research project on. She did a faunal study of the Elmidae mainly, but also the Dryopoidea, and then I'll mention a family called the Siphonidae. But she did a survey throughout Louisiana for these beetles. So I'd go help her. So I did a lot of collecting of ailments in that. These, when they're underwater and on those sticks and that, they get a lot of debris stuck to them. So she had trouble being able to see what she needed to see to identify them. So she actually had to clean her specimens. She had one of those little sonicating bath machines. It's a little machine that has a little well in it that you can put water, and she put some water and a little bit of detergent. She'd actually put then the beetles in there, and it would vibrate, and it would essentially knock all the debris and dirt off her beetles so she could then pin them up and be able to see what she needed to see. We do get them around here. When I first got here, one of the geology professors that I used to talk to, at least some, Don Schwert, said he didn't think there was any in North Dakota. He thought there was some in Minnesota, but we get them in North Dakota. In fact, I get them, they come to lights too. I run lights in my backyard in North Fargo, and they come to my lights fairly commonly there. So, and like I said, most likely you can see the antennae are a little bit long and filiform. Whereas in the next family, the Dryopoidea, the Dryopidae, now the antennae, you can see a close-up over there to the far left, but the antennae are much shorter and more serrate or toothed. Mm-hmm. Here the head is kind of withdrawn into the pronotum. The antennae are very short, with the last eight segments serrate or pectinate, often hidden. Now the front coccyx are transverse. Remember, they were globose in the previous family. Transverse are kind of flattened out. Tarsal formula is still 5-5-5. Again, with the last segment very long, with long claws, hence the common name, the long-toed water beetles. These tend to be just a little bit larger in size than the elmids. The one in the upper right on your handout, you can kind of tell that the eyes look a little fuzzy. Mm-hmm. It's because they have hairs growing out of their eyes. So their eyes are covered with hairs. It's kind of an interesting one. Pelanomus. Huh. Think that would make it hard to see, wouldn't you? Keeps their eyes warm, maybe. I don't know why they got hairs on their eyes.
Could be used to catch debris, I suppose, maybe. I don't know. Wait, that won't help at all.
These are unusual in that the immatures of this family are actually terrestrial. So they're terrestrial in the immature stage and then aquatic in the adult stage. There's not too many things that do that. Again, these will come to lights. They're in the same place as the riffle beetles are, clinging to vegetation or debris, sticks and stuff. Again, they may have a bubble of air around them to help them breathe. Now, the next family is still in the same group as the Heteroceridae, which are the variegated mud-loving beetles. These are usually actually in the water, but they're along water edges, kind of in the sandy or soft, silty soil. and they burrow down into that soil, and that's where, I don't know if you recall being around rivers or creeks, and you see the little chimneys sticking, mm-hmm. little clumps of dirt above the rest. That's them forming these little dirt chimneys. These can usually be recognized by the mandibles protruding straight out in front of their heads. You can see them in these two pictures of the mandibles kind of sticking out. Mandibles protrude forward. Most of the species burrow in the soil so that the front and middle tibia are often kind of fossorial. Have spines and that on them made for digging. The antennae are very short. The last seven segments forming a kind of an elongate club. In this family, the tarsal formula is only 4-4-4, with segments 1 and 4 longer than 2 and 3. Again, adults and larvae dig burrows in the mud or sand along ponds, streams, lakes. The adult burrows are usually marked by those dirt chimneys, as I mentioned. You can take water and pour water over those chimneys, and it often causes them to come up and out of the soil. So try that sometimes. See if you can catch some heterocerids by finding the chimneys and pouring water on it. Now, the next family that you got a handout for is another one that we no longer require. They don't occur around here. But it's another aquatic group called water penny beetles. They're mainly called water penny beetles because you can see the immatures are almost circular, almost look like a penny under the water when they're clinging to something like that. So, but again, the student down at Louisiana State, she was surveyed for those too. We didn't catch very many of those. They were much rarer than the Elmans and the Dryopans. Now,
quick question.
Yep.
So the previous set of families had the superfamily Dryopoidea. Was that changed to the Viroidea?
Some of this stuff just doesn't even match. Things have changed. I don't know, because yeah, we did have Dryopoidea on there, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't worry too much about it. My notes, we have these families in the Viroidea, and a lot of times I have put something in there when names have changed. And but right now, off the top of my head, I don't know what the situation is. You know, whether these are in the Viroidea or they've been moved to the Dryopoidea, or whether the Dryopoidea is an old name and now they're in the Viroidea. So, just know that the Elmans through the water pennies, which is not required, but they're kind of a nice group of related families. I'll see if I can look into that. And along those lines now, we go into the Elateroidea, some families that are related to the Elaterids, which these are the click beetles. Truthfully, there's several families in this group, but we're only going to really talk about the Elateridae. So these are the click beetles. These, the biggest character, and we've talked about before, but the prosternum, it's bottom row in the center, you can see it, but here's the prosternum, and it protrudes down between the front coccyx into a cavity on the mesosternum and kind of interlocks in there. And so then when it moves its head backwards, that pops out of that cavity and causes that clicking sound and also makes them jump in the air type of thing. Another character that helps you recognize an Elaterid is almost all of them have the posterior corners of the pronotum kind of protruding back almost in a sharp spine like. These are still tarsal formula 555. These are usually elongate, slender insects. They seem what rounded or narrowed posteriorly and anteriorly. So the head's kind of rounded and the posterior end of the body's kind of rounded. Antennae are usually filiform, sometimes serrate or pectinate. The adults are usually phytophagous. Find them on flowers, sometimes under bark or on vegetation. The immatures, do you guys know what we call the immatures? What's an immature?
Wireworms?
They're wireworms, right.
Remember Dr. Bodell during the end of the time I was working with him, started worrying about wireworms in the beets, I think it was.
Beets, yeah, he does most of his stuff on beets. Mm-hmm. That's what I was getting ready to say, that wireworms, they also feed on the roots, they're down in the soil feeding on the roots of plants, and there are a number of them that can be economic pests. There's some that attack corn, can be a pest in corn and stuff, so... In fact, it kind of, the opportunity went away. We got some money, one of the chemical companies, geez, I forget which one it was, came in here a couple years ago and were interested in knowing what wireworms we had in North Dakota. They were developing some chemical controls for wireworms, and they actually did give my lab some money, and Jerry went through the collection and identified wireworms and captured all the data off of them, or at least some. We just did the ones that we already had identified. We told them we had a lot more samples and stuff. We were hoping they were going to give us some more money and let us go through and do more IDs and stuff, but it kind of went away, that opportunity. But anyway, it's an important economic group too. There are some, those one towards the upper left, second from the top left, has those big eye-like spots on the pronotum. Again, they look like eyes, and so you can see how it might scare away a predator, but it's on the pronotum, they're not real eyes. Some of these, I mean, it's called the eyed elater or eyed click beetle. Some of them, those spots on the pronotum actually luminesce or glow. I've seen them at night flying, and you can't see the beetle, you just see the light, and it kind of almost like woodpeckers fly, you know, how they kind of go up and down, and you see this light just kind of going up and down. So anyway, a common family, lots of species. The systematist down at South Dakota State is a click beetle expert, Paul Johnson, so we've worked with him on some things too, and he was on one of my students' committees one time. So, now we go into the Cantheroidea. The Cantheroidea, this contains some families that tend to be a little more soft-bodied. The elytra is not really hard, as you see in some other families. They tend to be a little bit more soft and leathery. My notes say that there's about 10 families. We'll talk about four of them. Your textbook includes most of these families, though, in the Elateroidea. So they are, again, the names have kind of changed, but I do have a note. So you just be aware your textbook includes these in with the Elaterids. But the Elaterids are harder bodied usually. These are soft bodied. Most of these still have 555 tarsal formula with the fourth segment often with lobes underneath. The elytra usually covers the body. in these groups. Although when we'll talk about the Fengotidae, the elytra are a little different in the Fengotids. But first family we'll talk about is this netwing beetle group, the Lycidae. You were looking. Did you have any of these?
Possibly.
Normally, when we're down at Mere Pool or down in the Sandhills area, out in the wooded areas, we usually catch some of these. And I'm trying to remember. I don't remember catching any on our field trips this year. But they do occur around here. They're.
Yeah, I have seen them. Not this season.
Well, they're called netwing beetles because you can see the elytra is kind of ridged and has like cross ridges. It's kind of reticulate. So that's where the name comes from. Most of the species, the elytra is whitest more posteriorly. It's not in the middle, but the whitest part you can see is kind of more towards the posterior. What else about lycids? These are soft-bodied, easily recognized by the ridges, reticulated sculpturing on the wings, widest near the posterior end. These are often, the darker areas are kind of black, but the lighter areas can be oranges and reds and yellows, so they're kind of distinctively marked. What do you think about when you see things that are colored bright reds and yellows? I thought you said it. Aposomatic?
Yeah, asomatic or poison.
Aposomatic. Yep, they usually... So some of these do taste bad. They have chemicals in their bodies so predators don't like to eat them. Species, oftentimes, when they're taste bad, it helps... if they look like everybody else, the predators won't learn to stay away from them. So they develop these bright red and orange, yellow colors to advertise the fact that they're distasteful. And so that's why that's called aposomatic. And there are a number of other things that then mimic these things, some moths and some hemipterans and that look a lot like netwing beetles. So... there's a cerambycid even that looks like lycids. Adults feed on juices of decaying plant material, or some do not feed at all. Again, they're usually in wooded areas, so they're fairly distinctive. Now, the Fengotidae. These are called the glowworms. This is kind of an unusual family. In that, first off, the males in tinny are often pectinate to almost plumose. So this is the family I talked about, that they have the pectinate to plumose in tinny. Also, the elytra tend to be pointed apically. And they can be kind of short. And... beyond that, there's other things like staphylinids and that have short elytra, but their wings still fold up under the elytra. These, the hind wings, don't fold up under there. They just cover the body. To me, when you see an adult like this, they just look unkempt. Wings sticking out in that. The females look like the larvae. That's actually on your handout, the lower left. That's an adult female at the bottom.
Oh. They look like the larvae, though. Is there any way to tell the difference between the two? Or?
I don't know what the specific characters are. Those are larvae. Should be larvae on the right-hand side. But no, I don't know. They look very larval-like. The genitalia is probably developed, where in the larvae they wouldn't be developed. I don't know. Sometimes there's differences in tarsal segments between immatures and adults. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Okay.
So most are somewhat broad flat beetles with the elytra short and pointed. The abdomen covered only by the membranous wings. And they're fan-shaped, non-folding. Antennae are usually serrate, but in males they may be pectinate or even plumose. The adult females are wingless and luminescent. They look much like the larvae. The larvae are predaceous, but that's where the glowworms come from, is that the females can luminesce.
So only the females luminesce.
As far as I know. Yeah. But talking about luminescing, that brings us to our next family, the Lampyridae.
Lightning bugs.
Fireflies.
Lightning bugs and fireflies. Another interesting group, and we do have some around here, although they don't tend to be very common. Where I grew up in Indiana, they were everywhere. You take a drive in the country side in the middle of summer, and literally you'd see hundreds and thousands of lights going off on these, over above the soybean fields or wherever. It's just spectacular. But here, it's never quite like that. These are somewhat flattened, elongate oval. They're usually brown and yellows in color. Occasionally they might have some reddish or darker markings. The head is usually not visible from above. You can see the pronotum is kind of oval, triangular in shape. Mm-hmm. It covers the head up from above. Also, a lot of the species often have some ridges or crinae on the elytra. So you can see these ridges. They're not huge ridges, but they are visible. Antennae are 11 segmented, 11 or filiform or serrate. The elytra tend to be somewhat parallel-sided in most species, often with these two ridges or crinae on them. In many species, not all, but many species have these luminescent organs on the sixth and seventh abdominal segments. You turn them over and you know their abdomen will be black, and then those last couple segments are kind of a yellowish color, luminescent organs. There are a few species that don't light up and don't have luminescent organs. They tend to be more active during the daytime than at night. This ability to produce light flashes is it's kind of a cold light. There's no heat involved, and it's almost 100% efficient energy conversion. The cells that produce light come from the fat body cells. They're modified fat cells. And they kind of have a reflective membrane behind them. But they contain a substance called luciferin. Luciferin. Which, in the presence of oxygen, gets oxidized to oxyluciferin, and there has to be an enzyme present called luciferase. So luciferin, in the presence of oxygen and this enzyme luciferase, is oxidized to oxyluciferin, and that's how the lightning bugs, mainly it's the females, control the beat of the light. The pulse, the frequency, and the duration is by controlling the oxygen going to that. They can, through the trachea, they can control the airflow through the trachea in that. And so each species has their own frequency and duration of light pulses. And that's how they are attracted to each other for finding mates. There are some predatory species where the females will actually mimic the pulse of other species. And so it attracts males in of the wrong species, and when they come in, they'll eat them. Mm-hmm. There's a term for that kind. It's a type of mimicry. You remember the name of that kind of mimicry? I think it's a form of what they just call aggressive mimicry.
Oh.
Trying to
figure out an actual...
Yeah, no, it's not really Batesian or Mullerian. It's a... probably a reason they're not as common around here is a lot of the species do feed on... They're predatory, feed on other organisms, but they tend to feed like on terrestrial snails and slugs and things like that, which we do have slugs and things up here, but you might see them a little more in wetter areas too that have more snails and slugs and stuff. And then the last family in this Cantharoidea we'll talk about is the Cantharidae itself. These are the soldier beetles. Does any of these look familiar to you, especially the second to the left on the bottom row?
They look kind of like the goldenrod beetles.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a common...
Like kind of golden?
Yeah, it's the one that gets... I mean, a lot of these get on goldenrod late in the year. But yeah, that one that we were getting on about every trip out on the flowers and stuff is this one down in the lower left-hand corner. So Cantharidae, they're commonly called soldier beetles. They're often relatively brightly colored with yellows and black. Again, a lot of these are distasteful, and so it is some aposomatic coloration. They contain anti-feeding compounds in the hemolymph and can release defensive compounds from segmental glands. Again, the body is somewhat elongate, usually somewhat parallel-sided. Now, these are different from the Lampyridae. They don't, now the pronotum doesn't cover the head up, for example. They don't usually have those carinae on the elytra. And these don't have the luminescent organs on the abdomen, so. Again, the adults are common on flowers, often on goldenrod or maybe milkweed. Adults feed on pollen and nectar. The immatures are predators, often on grasshopper eggs. Some are predaceous on small caterpillars and snails. There's a few that feed on plants that can cause some damage to things like wheat or potatoes. They overwinter as larvae. Sometimes they can be seen early in the spring as the melting snow kind of flushes them out of the wherever they're overwintering in. So, but anyway, fairly common, soft body, should have some Cantharidae. Now, we're going into a group called the Bostricoidea. And here again, my notes call it the Bostricoidea, your handout calls it the Dermestoidea. And I'm not sure what the difference is, why we're... This is one of our favorite families, right? Dermestids. Dermestidae. Dermestid beetles, a lot of them have their own common names. Each different species has a common name. These are relatively small beetles, usually strongly convex, maybe slightly flattened in some species, maybe elongate and narrow. Usually these are pretty dark in color, black in color, but you see a lot of them, they look like they have patterns. Those patterns are due to hairs or scale-like hairs on the body. If you take your finger and rub rub the scales off, they'll be pretty much just black underneath. So the colors you see on these pictures, and I think there's another handout of them too, maybe two or three, that he gave a fair number of examples. But most of the coloration on these is due to the scale-like hairs on their bodies. Oftentimes you cannot see the head from above. Again, the pronotum kind of covers the head. Antennal club is three-segmented usually. They may have one or two dorsal ocelli. The procoxy or conical projecting, sometimes transverse. The metacoxy are often what they call excavate. I don't know that we've talked about this. We'll see it in some families, but they call the coxy excavate if it's got kind of a groove in it. And actually, when they fold their legs up tight to their body, the femur will kind of fit into that groove. So it gets up there close, and so there'll actually be, like I said, a groove that the legs can kind of fit into the femora. Dermestids, these are mostly scavengers feeding on all kinds of plant and animal material, usually dead or dried out material, but this is where, of course, we're most hated pest in our insect collections. We are constantly battling dermestid beetles. In fact, I've got a lot of stuff in my office. We keep putting these no pest strips in there, but if you don't keep it up, they'll still get in there. I've had some stuff in my office that I work on that have got hit by dermestid beetles. And the quickest remedy is I take stuff and take them to our walk-in freezer, and put them in there for a few weeks, and it'll kill them. On this first handout, that beetle towards the left is a little bit bigger than most, but it's called a larder beetle. It's black and kind of got this broad white band going across its back. I've killed one in my house a month or two ago in our bathroom and that. But often it's a sign that maybe there's been a dead mouse or something someplace and they've gotten to, and you see those. But a lot of them, they're called carpet beetles. Some of them, they'll cause damage to furniture and all kinds of things. So just a all-around problematic family in a lot of ways. Although in nature they may have a benefit that they are scavengers and eliminate some of this problematic stuff. They're also often used in biology departments. If you bring in a mammal carcass and you want just the bones, the skeleton, a lot of biology departments often have a colony of these beetles going that will, over the course of a few weeks to months, will clean all the meat and everything off, and you'll be left with the nice skeleton. So there are some that are also pests in stored grain situations, as you might expect. So anyway, a lot of dermestids can be a problem. Got another handout that shows some more. The immatures are really characteristic. Again, I see these immatures in the museum collections and just, ugh. Now, the family Bostrichidae. Truthfully, the Bostrichidae, tend to be fairly hard-bodied, and they're a little bit more elongate and cylindrical in shape. A lot of these actually look a lot like bark beetles, but just a little bit larger and more elongate than bark beetles. Bark beetles used to be their own family, the Scelidae, but now they're a subfamily of the weevils, actually. So we'll talk about those later. They're actually placed now at the end of the Coleoptera, but that would be the family that you'd most likely confuse these with. The Bostrichids, again, are kind of elongate, slender, cylindrical in shape, with kind of these rows of tubercles or bumps or kind of roughened-looking elytra in the pronotum. These also you can see they've got clubbed antennae, but they're kind of elongate clubs, a little bit longer. When we get to the Scolytinae, the bark beetles, they'll have a clubbed antenna, but it'll be a really well-defined ball shape. So the shape of the club of the antennae are very different. Bostricids, and you see the same thing in the bark beetles, but in some bostricids, at the posterior end of the body, this elytra will be kind of hollowed out, and there'll be a series of little spines coming off the posterior end. You don't have a good picture of it on this handout, but again, we see this in the bark beetles also. So anyway, the head is, in this family, the head is not or only scarcely visible from above. So most of them you can't, or just barely can see the head from above. Get elongate, cylindrical, maybe pubescent or bare. The antennae are straight, with an 8 to 11 segmented, with this 3 segmented elongate club. The pronotum usually is not edged laterally, it's rounded, just goes around without a sharp ridge or edge. Again, the dorsal surface is roughened or rugose, somewhat tuberculate or wrinkled. They may have those spines. At the posterior end of the elytra, the formula is 555, with the first segment very small. And as I mentioned, these might be confused with the bark beetles, but the club's different. Only a few can attack seasoned wood. They may attack living trees, but they usually attack the dead branches or twigs on the tree. There's one that it's called the lead cable borer. I don't know if it, yeah, they're in the middle, bottom row. It's been known to burrow through lead cable. The lesser grain borer is a pest of stored grains and cereals. Now, this is the typical bostricids. This next handout used to be a separate family, the Lictidae, but now these have been rolled in with the bostricids. So this is now just the Lictinae within the bostricidae. These, you can now see the head from above a little bit more. These, the antennal club is only 2 segmented, so a little bit different than the Bostricidae. They still have the tarsal formula 555 with the first segment very small. These are commonly called powder post beetles because the immatures do burrow into dry seasoned wood and reduce it to a powder. These are the ones, I don't know if you've ever gone to like these export stores. Oh, what are they called? What's the one that you go to a store that exports or imports various things from other countries? But you may have we had one up here for a long time, a wooden statue of a head, and it's got all these little tiny holes in it.
Yeah.
That's what, these are what causes all those little holes, that little peppering of holes. They live beneath the surface of wood for many months, and wood from the adults emerge may be peppered with tiny holes. So, and often it's, a lot of times it's wood made out of monocots, like bamboos and things like that. But, so.
I think those were the larvae that we looked at on our first day. I'm looking at the larvae on an actual picture of them.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if these take for
a while. Yeah, we didn't. I remember, I just put them off to the side, and that's where I found the history. What?
What's that now?
I think we saw the larva for the previous one, but that's a name.
Oh, the Death Watch beetles?
Don't cut yourself on that edge. It's a very edgy name.
Oh. So you've not heard of Death Watch Beatles, huh?
No.
Well, I mean, I can go jump to that story. I mean, these are the Anabaeidae, and the whole family of the Anabaeid beetles, but a lot of them have, again, separate common names. This is kind of like the Dermestids. They've got a lot of problematic species that feed on, again, dried animal and plant materials and stuff. But the Death Watch beetle common name comes that some of these burrow into wood, and when they're in their wood galleries, they thump their head against the side of the galleries, and it makes a ticking sound.
Oh.
And back in the day, when long time ago, when people, you know, there wasn't medical facilities just everywhere, and so most times people got sick and that they were nursed and cared for in their homes, and sometimes you knew the person was in the process of dying. And you could hear these beetles in the wall, click, 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 click. And that's where the name came from, Death Watch beetles. These are small, maybe cylindrical to oval in shape, usually pubescent. The head is deflexed and often concealed by the pronotum from above. Sometimes you can see it a little bit, but most times you can't see the head from above very well. Antennae are 9 to 11 segmented, filiform, serrate. With last three segments longer, sometimes pectinate or flabellate. Again, tarsal formula is 5-5-5. With segments 2 through 4 getting smaller in length as you go out. These live in logs, twigs, plant stems, some in fungi or seeds. It also includes what they call the drugstore beetle, fed on drugs and things like that. The cigarette beetle, it was more on plant material, tobacco, pet foods. There's one called the furniture beetle. Again, just like the Dermestids, there's a lot of varied habits, but a lot of them are feeding on things that we have stored foods or use as fabric for carpets and and furniture and stuff like that. And of course the Death Watch beetle that I described. Notice in this, on this handout, upper right hand corner, it shows the close up of a head. What they're illustrating is that the antennae in this group are fairly far apart. What they're getting at is the next handout. Oh, not the next one. We got another one with just the straight Anabaeidae showing some of those, the drugstore beetle, furniture beetle, cigarette beetle, again, a Death Watch beetle. But then the next one, just like the last family, this used to be its own family, the Tinnidae. But now it's been rolled into the Anabaeidae. These are called the spider beetles because a lot of them do have kind of long legs and look kind of spidery. But anyway, these are now considered Anabaeidae. But the difference between these two, now you can see over at the far left-hand corner, there's a close-up of the head, and you can see the antennae come off the head right next to each other, real close. So there is a way to tell these Tinnidae from the Anabaeidae. But it's now one less family you have to know because they're just Anabaeidae, right? Here, the head and pronotum are usually much narrower than the elytra. Again, the antennal insertions are close together. There's no lateral edge to the pronotum. It's rounded laterally. Antennae are 11 segmented. Tarsal formula is 5-5-5. Again, some are spider-like in appearance. Again, they still feed on a variety of animal and plant material. Few are found in stored grain situations and stuff like that. So,
is
their tibia is kind of curved. Is that?
Pardon?
The tibia on like the American spider beetle is super curved. Is that this character's in that family?
It's not, I mean, not all of them, but the ones that look more like spider beetles, they may be curved. I mean, it's really curved in this one in the center. So some species would be that way, but I don't know that it's a thing that they usually define the family with. But now we move into the cleroidea. The cleroidea, these families are small to medium sized. These, again, there's some tendency towards softer bodies. Again, tarsal formula is still 5-5-5. The head is often somewhat pronathous. You can see the mouth parts on this one in the trogocidids here going forwards. Antennae are clubbed or filiform. Most of these are predatory. We'll take a look at three families in this group: the trogocidids, clarids, and malarids. Trogocidids, these often, I think when I learned them, they were ostomatidae. So you might see ostomatidae or even just ostomidae. Some old family names that these used to go by. Antennae are clavate or terminate in a three-segmented, kind of poorly defined club. Again, tarsal formula is 5-5-5 with the first segment very short. Front coxae or transverse. Now there's several different subfamilies, but most of them, what you're most likely to encounter are these that they kind of look like they've got a gap between the pronotum and then the elytra. So you can see in most of these. This is the common subfamily. The other subfamily are more like this one. Let's see, what's that one? That's the Peltinae. Those others are in the Trogocidinae, but the Peltinae is that one like on the top row, second from the left, where there's not that gap between the pronotum and the abdomen. So the Trogocidinae are cylindrical to flattened. The head is as wide as the pronotum. So on those that have that gap between the pronotum and the elytra, the head is also just about as wide at the base as the pronotum. Pronotum separated by narrow waist from elytra. Some of these are actually brightly colored too. There's some metallic blue and green species. The Peltinae are more flattened with the head about one half the width of the pronotum, and it lacks that waist, that gap. These are often found under bark, in woody fungi, dry vegetable matter, given where they're mostly predaceous on other insects. A few can inflict a painful bite. I guess they can get hold of you with their mandibles there.
Those are some impressive mandibles.
The cadell beetle is common in stored grains or granaries. That would be this one here to the far right. It can be a pest in stored grains. The Peltinae are chiefly on fungi. Not common, but I think I've caught some trogocidids around here. The next family is a kind of a cool family. It's the Claridae, or checkered beetles. And we do have a few species around here, but they're kind of grayish or grayish with some white markings. But in other places, these are brightly colored reds and yellows and marked with black and that. So in fact, that's where the common name comes from, checkered beetles, is in reference to the bright colors on them. They're more common in the southwestern U.S., although we used to get them fairly common in the southeast, too. Here, the head is often wider than the pronotum, so you can see in a lot of these species, the head, width across the head is greater than across the pronotum. So it almost looks like they have a neck. In many of the species, anyway. Again, there's usually the lateral margins of the pronotum are rounded, doesn't have an edge. Antennae are usually clubbed, sometimes serrate or pectinate, rarely filiform. Tarsal formula is still 5-5-5, but with either the first or the fourth segment very small. Often some of the tarsal segments will be lobed underneath. The front coccyx are conical. These are elongate and they're often pubescent, have a lot of hairs on the body. Looked almost a little velvety or hairy. Brightly colored. Most are predaceous as both adults and immatures. Many are common on or within tree trunks or logs where they prey on the larvae of other wood-boring insects, chiefly bark beetles. There's a few that are scavengers, one that can be a pest on stored meats. You can see that in the middle. There's one there called a ham beetle. Some feed on pollen. I'd say that's where I used to catch them all the time. The trip I took down to the southwestern U.S., they were on flowers all the time. Lots of different colored checkered beetles. And then the last family in this group is the Meliridae. This, again, I actually learned it as a different name, the Malachillidae. So again, if you see that older name, Malachillidae, that refers to this group also. These are a little bit smaller and a little bit broader or more roundish, but they are, again, fairly soft-bodied insects. Ten millimeters or less. Again, there many are brightly colored, red, blues, and blacks. The body is somewhat pubescent, but it's not quite as hairy as what we saw in the clarids. The elytra and many of the eastern U.S. species are wider, again, kind of posteriorly. So you can see some of these, again, it's wider towards the end of the body. At least here in the eastern U.S. These look kind of like chrysomelids that we haven't done over yet, but they look like leaf beetles. But these have tarsal formula 5-5-5 or 4-5-5 in some of the males. Whereas Chrysomelidae, when we get to them later, they're 4-4-4. So there is a difference in the tarsal formulas. So here the hind coccyx are traversed. Tarsal formula is 5-5-5 or 4-5-5 in males. This will distinguish them from the Chrysomelidae, which are 4-4-4. Head is partially covered by the pronotum, which now is margined laterally, so not rounded laterally, they have a little ridge or edge. Some of these have eversible glands on the abdominal segment. You'll catch them and you'll see it'll be kind of a dark colored body and all of a sudden these bright orange glands are sticking out. And again, it's probably defensive substances come out of those. These, I believe, again, for probably taste bad because of the bright, I mean, they have the bright colors to show that. That one in the middle center of the top row is called the Red Cross Beetle. You can see why it's called the Red Cross Beetle. It's got a red cross on its back. That's actually one of the more common ones that I've collected. Again, these occur on flowers and foliage where they're predators on other insects. A few are pollen feeders. The immatures are often under the bark of dead trees or in leaf litter where they're carnivorous or scavengers. So, Cucujoidea. This superfamily, I mean, all I say is these are small beetles, usually with clubbed antennae. We'll cover six families in this gathering. And the first one is the Nidodulidae. These look familiar. Might have caught some Nidodulids. Sap beetles. These are small, usually less than 12 millimeters, elongate, robust, or broadly oval. They can be broadly oval. They often have the edges, or sometimes have the edges of the pronotum kind of produced out. This one down in the lower, towards the lower right, second from the right, almost looks like a tortoise beetle when we get to those, but it's not. Again, the antennae are 11 segmented with an abrupt 3-segmented club. So you can see they've got a capitate type club, pretty well defined. The elytra are often somewhat shortened. And so in some species, you can see the end of the abdomen sticking out. Mm-hmm. If you recall, before, I talked about there was a chance you might confuse these with staphylinids when we talked about the staphylinids having short elytra. But do you remember what I told you on how these differ?
Staphylinids,
weren't they like kind of flat goes eventually
though? Yeah, a little bit, but these can be too. And the main character, I mean, to me, these look like sap beetles. Staphylinids look like staphylinids. But anyway, the character I gave you is that these only have 5 visible abdominal sterna, whereas the staphylinids, and maybe I even mentioned the hysterids, they have 6 to 7 abdominal sterna showing. So you can see more body segments on the underneath side in the staphylinids and hysterids, and only 5 in this group. Tarsal formula is 555, rarely 444. But 555 with the 4th segment small. Again, tarsi are somewhat dilated underneath. Most nidodulids are found where plant fluids are fermenting or souring. Another common name, I mean the sap beetle, they go to saps and things. Another common name you often hear is picnic beetles. If you're out having a picnic and got fruits and things, these things will come and get in your food and that. And so they can kind of be an annoyance sometimes when they're out in abundance.
If you use fruit, you'll catch a couple. I got one at least. I know I got a couple others, but yeah, they cleaned up the trash before I could get that to finish.
Yeah, well, they can be a pest in things like strawberries and fruits like that. You'll pick them and you'll see all they're lodged in there. Even my apples, apple trees, where sometimes late in the year the yellow jackets come in and gnaw holes in your apples. And you look in there and you see the hole and there'll be nidodulid beetles in there. So my interesting story with nidodulids is when I was in high school, well, my dad was a high school teacher, but during the summers he would paint houses and barns. And I painted on his crew with him. That's how I made money We made a lot of good money painting, and he was good at it. And that, but there was one house that the paint we bought to paint that house had some chemical in it that must have been close to or mimicked the pheromones of these things. And we were painting this house, and these things literally flew in by the thousands and were going right into our buckets or landing on the wet paint on the house. They were definitely attracted to something in that paint, and they were just, they were everywhere. It was kind of a real pain. So anyway, that's the Nidadoolans. Get through these Cucujoidea families, then all we have left is the Tenebrionoidea, Chrysomeloidea, and Curculionoidea. I don't know how long he'll be, whether to pause until he gets back or okay. Earlier in today's lecture, we covered a couple families where we added or subsumed some other families. What I'm getting at is there's a couple families that we've put together into one family. This is just the opposite. This family, the Sylvanidae, used to be within the Cucujidae, and now it's been taken out as a separate family. So now we're talking about a couple families that have been split apart. And this one was took a little bit of getting used to because it contains a major pest in stored grains and cereals and things like that, this sawtooth grain beetle. And so I always learned that the sawtooth grain beetle was in the family Cucujidae. And so it took some getting used to say, well, no, now it's not in the Cucujidae anymore, it's in the Sylvanidae. But anyway, the Sylvanidae, this used to be in the Cucujidae. Your text now has it as a separate family. It can be characterized by having clubbed antennae, and the antennae are a little bit shorter, only reaching to about the middle of the pronotum. So if, what we're getting at is if you swing the antennae around, it only reaches to about the middle of the pronotum. Okay, you can see I've X'd out a couple in this first handout. Mm-hmm. The two to the left are now in other families that we don't worry about, the Passandridae and the Limafloidae. They really split the Cucujidae up big time. But these are a couple we don't worry about. We still want to talk about the Sylvanidae again because this sawtooth grain beetle is a major pest, and we do have them brought in up here every once in a while and stuff. So, but anyway, Sylvanidae, again, have a clubbed antennae. The antennae only reach back to about the middle of the pronotum. The tarsal formula is 5-5-5 with the fourth segment small. These are somewhat flattened, fairly small, 2.5 to 3 millimeters. And again, this sawtooth grain beetle. It's called the sawtooth grain beetle because you can see those rows of teeth on the lateral margins of the pronotum. Kind of look like the teeth of a saw. So the sawtooth grain beetle. And so Cucujidae, we always thought was an important family because of this one. And so it is now the Cucujidae itself contains beetles that are not so common. The Cucujidae have in them some of these more flattened, you can see this lateral view that they often are very flat, and these are kind of monochrome colored, meaning that they may be browns or brownish reds or brown blacks, but they tend to be uniformly colored. There's not a lot of light areas or dark areas, so they're kind of monochromatically colored. tarsal formula in this one is 5-5-5 with the first segment small. The antennae are relatively straight. And now you can see that they're a little bit longer. They usually at least reach to the base of the elytra or beyond. You see the one in the lower right-hand corner is much longer. So the antennae are a little bit longer in this group. Again, some of them are extremely flattened. These are often, again, things that are usually are extremely flattened are usually under bark. So they may feed on mites and things like that under bark and that. And I think we can still get these true cucugidae around here under bark and in dead logs and things like that. So. Next family is one that I every year debate whether I should keep it in or not, but I haven't taken it out of our families yet. But these are the Langurea, they're called lizard beetles. I don't know if they, I have to check with Jerry. I don't know if these actually occur around here or not. They're common in the South. They're elongate, slender, again, cylindrical beetles that are nice and brightly colored. These dark areas are often dark blue or reddish. The light areas might be reddish or orangish in color. So these are really pretty, nice, pretty beetles. Again, mostly in the southern United States. Parallel sided, often shiny, very shiny looking. Often red or orange head and pronotum with black or bluish elytra. Antennae are 11 segmented with a 3-6 segmented club. The tarsal formula is 5-5-5 with the fourth segment small. Larvae are stem borers in legumes and composites. In fact, some can be a pest. You know, there's one called the clover stem borer on your hand out there. So it can be a minor pest on red clover and alfalfa. So I think, I'm sure we have some for you to look at, Matt. But again, it's one that probably is not common or may not even be around here. Now the next two families, I always like these two. And I always said, how would you like to have this common name? I'm a pleasing fungus beetle. And the next family is a handsome fungus beetle. But these next two, they're a lot colored a lot like the Langureas, the last family, except these now are usually not so elongate and cylindrical. These are more rounded and oval shaped, but not cylindrical shaped. The aerotility, the pleasing fungus beetles, elongate oval to broadly oval. In some of them in this family, the tarsal formula is obviously 5-5-5. And in some, the fourth segment is very small, so it might appear to be 4-4-4. But it's really 5-5-5 with the fourth segment small. These are shining, again, usually black and orange with blotches or transverse stripes. Here, the antennal club is usually only 3 segmented. Antennae are 11 segmented. As the name applies, being pleasing, because they're pleasing to look at. And fungus beetles, because they do, the immatures and that do burrow or feed on fungi. And so that's one way you can collect these is like those big fungi on the sides of trees and stuff or that. You can break those off and bring them into the lab. And sometimes, may take some months sometimes, but sometimes these beetles will emerge from the fungi in that. They also, I've seen pictures of little window pane traps. You know, the window, they make little tiny ones with a little collecting trough under them that you can attach to a side of a tree. So if it's got those fungi, you can put a little window pane trap just below it, and the beetles would fly and hit and fall into the little collecting chamber at the bottom of it. So, again, larvae and adults are in fungi or rotten wood. Adults tend to be more nocturnal. Sometimes they can be considered beneficial because they may feed on fungi that causes heart rot in trees. And always talk about the ways you can collect them. Now, the next one looks a lot like the previous family, called the handsome fungus beetles. And they're colored similarly with the blacks and then the reds and oranges and yellows. But now this family, this is the Endomycete, the handsome fungus beetles. Again, these are oval to oblong, 1 to 10 millimeters in length. These often have two little grooves on the base of the pronotum. So you can see a little groove there and a little groove there. Here'd be a groove, and there'd be one. So that's one of the defining characters, is they have these pair of short little grooves on the base of the pronotum. Mm-hmm. The tarsal formula is 4-4-4. But sometimes, because the third tarsal segment is small, it'll appear to be 3-3-3. So the tarsal formula is different in this family than the previous one, the Eratillids. Tarsal claws are simple, just normal claws. Also, the head is easily visible from above. What we're doing is preparing you to be able to tell them apart from the next family, the lady beetles. Mm-hmm. So again, larvae are on fungi, adults are on fungi, rotten wood or decaying fruits. Rarely you'll find them on dung or carrion, but usually around fungi and that. And then we go to family that you should be very familiar with. The ladybird beetles, or ladybugs. Coccinellidae. These are oval to round, convex dorsally, but they're very flattened underneath. Now you can see that you can't see the head from above. That's what we were getting about by within the Endomycete, that you can still see the head from above. The tarsal formula is apparently 3-3-3 segmented. It's actually 4-4-4, but the third segment is very small and concealed. So it's actually 4-4-4. If you get a really good microscope and look hard, you can see the fourth segment. But just generally looking at it, it'll look 3-3-3. That's what we said in your general tarsal formula rules, is that the coccinellids would be 3-3-3. Tarsal claws are usually toothed or cleft, so they're not simple. Antennae are 8 to 11 segmented with a weak 3 to 6 segmented club. Again, the head is often concealed above by the expanded pronotum. These typically, when we say lady beetle, probably what comes to your mind are these orange or reddish orange with the black spots on them. There are a few that have stripes rather than spots. There's some that are just plain. You can see that one there towards the center right that doesn't have any spots. But then there's also quite a few species that are just the opposite, that are black with orange or red spots. They tend to be a little bit smaller than that. You also think of lady beetles as being beneficial. They're predatory, feed on other insects and other things. But just be aware that there are some plant feeding species. This one that I've marked off in the bottom row, right in the center, the Mexican bean beetle. It's that Epilochna. Is a bad pest on beans. So there are some pest coccinellids. It's not 100% beneficial. again, they've been used in biological control. There's lots of different species. This one here is called the convergent lady beetle because it's got those pale stripes that kind of converge towards each other. Sometimes they're named by how many spots they have. You can see the twice stabbed lady beetle there. Two-spotted lady beetle. Of course, we all know about this one that's been imported, the Asian lady beetle. It's kind of taken over a lot of places, and it's also a bad one that it likes to get in people's homes during the winter time, and so people think it's a nuisance. I've got a lot of plants I bring in and grow. I wish I'd have more come in and actually help keep some of the indoor plant pests down. I have trouble with mealybugs and aphids sometimes, but also this the Asian multicolored lady beetle. Also, people say it bites. I've never been bitten by one, but people say it bites sometimes, and it's annoying. So, and we've gone about a half an hour over, and I think we're in pretty good shape. I thought we might go ahead and do the Tenebria noidea, but this is a good stopping point right here for the. So what we'll have left is the Tenebria noidea, which has some pretty important families. The Tenebrionidae and the blister beetles are in this group, the Meloidae. And then we have the Chrysomeloidea, which mainly is the Chrysomelids and the Cerambycids. And then we have the Curculionoidea, which are the weevil groups. So I think there's a chance we can get good ways tomorrow. Through the Tenebrionoidea, maybe the Curculion or the Chrysomeloidea, and then I bet by Tuesday of next week we could finish the beetles and maybe get close to getting done with the Neuroptera. So I think we're catching up some, maybe. So this would be a good spot to stop for today. So looks like then, if you wanted, you can go and feast on dips in the. Today's dip day. Have you been around there to the office?
I haven't.
Today is, they have an annual dip day. Diane organizes, and I guess today's the day, so there'll be all kinds of dips and goodies for people to eat in the coffee room.
I like free stuff.
Oh, I should have said stop first.
What did I miss when I stepped out of class?